Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. This is episode 74. It's January 16th, 2015. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealth Studying Podcast, I try and help you build not only your net worth, but more importantly, your freedom. And I do that by trying to teach you 10 wealth building principles. Now, these principles are not complicated. Some would even say they're common sense. But when you look around at Americans and you see how many of them are broke when we live in a land of prosperity, it becomes obvious pretty quickly that these principles aren't in common acceptance. So hey, if you're new to the podcast, go back and review the first 10 episodes. That's where I lay out the foundation for my philosophy on building wealth and liberty and independence. This isn't something I read in a book or learned at college. This is what I've learned through the school of hard knocks and experience I've gained while building my financial independence over the last nearly 30 years. Well, I want to jump right into today's topic. And that's a discussion about the actions of the Swiss Central Bank this week to reset their currency and decouple the franc from the euro. Now, today I had planned on talking about deflation and inflation, but I'll put that off till an episode that I'll record over the weekend. So what I'll do this weekend is I'll come back with not only a market review, talk about this extreme volatility we've seen in the stock market, but I'll also give you some thoughts on inflation and deflation and why you might be confused by it if you're listening to what the popular media is saying. Now, as far as the actions of the Swiss Central Bank, let me first start out by saying that although this is different than what I talked about in the previous episode about Russia defaulting, it's really just a manifestation of the same theme. See, what I was trying to get across in episode 73 was just the uncertainty, the global uncertainty that we're seeing in the markets right now. Now, I have no idea if Russia's going to default, but that is a fear, and so I wanted to discuss some of those realities and consequences that could occur if Russia does default. Well, less than 24 hours after I did that podcast, we get the Swiss Central Bank's announcement that they're decoupling their franc from the euro. Now see, in episode 73, if I would have talked about that, many of you would have thought that that was as unlikely to happen or more unlikely to happen than Russia defaulting. And that's the problem with these crazy uncertainties and arbitrary situations we're in right now. You see, last week, the Swiss Central Bank came out and virtually assured the world that their policy to have their Swiss franc, that's their currency, their policy for the last 3 years has been to have their currency linked to the euro. Now, we'll talk in a minute as to why they did that. But just 5 days ago, they were guaranteeing the world that that was a long-term policy. And then virtually overnight, they come out and do a complete 180 and take the markets by surprise and totally change the policy. Now, the funny part about this is that people are actually shocked that central banks don't tell the truth. Well, that probably doesn't surprise anybody in this audience. But again, you see, that's the pickle that we're in right now. For the last 6 years or so, our economy has been totally juiced by the printing of money and the interference in our economy by the United States Federal Reserve, and not only by our central bank, but really by all the banks in the world. And the problem with that is, we never know when they're going to pull the plug. You see, it's arbitrary. The entire economy of the world is controlled by what a few central bankers decide to do, and they can either change their mind overnight. Or in fact, they can have long-term plans to change their mind and just lie to you all the way up until the night before. Now, I don't know if the central bank in Switzerland has been lying to us or if just all of a sudden they've changed their mind. But either way, it doesn't matter. What you as an investor need to be concerned about is the outcome and the consequences of this type of arbitrary rule. We saw the Swiss franc shoot up about 30%. No, it didn't stay at that level. It did drop down some. And then consequently, at the same time, we saw their stock market fluctuating, being down anywhere from about 10 to 13%. Now, the point I want to make about this is just how unstable things can be. And we'll talk a little bit more about the overall repercussions to it. But just look at what's happening in Switzerland's market. If you were shorting the Swiss franc, as many people were, because as again, as I just mentioned in an episode or two ago, their interest rates were nearly at zero. And in fact, now they've gone negative. But there were a lot of people during arbitrage trades whereby they were borrowing in Swiss francs because the interest rates were so low. It was virtually like free money. So they'd borrow in Swiss francs and then they'd bring that money into other markets. For example, into the United States market. They'd borrow from Switzerland at say 10 basis points and then you could put that into United States treasuries for say 180 basis points. So just on that arbitrage trade, what they call a carry trade, they were able to make a profit on the spread because the spread was so large. And don't think this kind of borrowing was limited to sophisticated traders like people at Goldman Sachs. Many, many of the loans in Europe, particularly in Eastern Europe, were denominated in Swiss francs. For example, in Poland and Hungary, common people, just regular everyday individuals and workers, were borrowing from Swiss banks, they were borrowing Swiss francs to purchase their homes, to fund their mortgages. Because again, they could borrow money at such extraordinary low interest rates. They take those francs, they convert them into euros, for example, or whatever their local currency was, and they'd pay that to the bank. Well, that was all fine and good until now that the franc has exploded in its value, because if it's 30% more than the euro, you see their debt just went up 30%. So just in simple terms, if they had borrowed the equivalent of 100,000 euros for their mortgage, well, now overnight, they owe something like 130,000 euros because their loan is denominated in Swiss francs, meaning they have to pay it back in francs, and the value of francs went up. So they have to pay more euros to clear out their debt. Well, you can see, just like the subprime loans that forced many Americans into bankruptcy in 2008, well, you can see why that might force many mortgage owners in Eastern Europe into bankruptcy. But it's not limited to these unsophisticated investors. The same thing is holding true with traders and speculators and investors that were shorting the franc or that were long on Swiss multinational companies. And you might recall that Switzerland is home to many large financial institutions, to some large pharmaceutical and biotech type companies, as well as a few food companies. So those are names you would recognize, like Nestle, Credit Suisse, Hoffmann La Roche, big multi-internationals like that. So if you were trading long in those stocks, you've gotten hurt over the last 24 to 48 hours. And if you were betting against the Swiss currency, you really got hurt. And let me point something out. Many people that are trading stocks think that they'll be protected from a loss just because they have a stop order in. But that's wrong thinking. And real quick, just let me explain for those of you who don't know what a stop loss order is. Let's say you own a stock and it's currently trading at $30 a share. Well, you can put an order in with your broker for a stop loss, which would be to say that if it drops below a certain level, you want to sell it. So for example, if the stock is currently trading at $30 and you don't want to lose any more than 2% on it, you could have a stop loss order in with your broker to say that if the price of that stock drops down to $29.40, which would be about 2% below that $30 mark, that you want to sell it. So you go around with a false sense of security, thinking that you're protected and you've limited your loss to no more than 2%. But you see, that's not the case. Because when that order gets executed, it gets filled and executed as a market order. So although it may have gotten triggered at $29.40, maybe by the time your order goes through the queue, the price has dropped down to $29 or $28.75 or $25. You see, this is how flash crashes happen. You've probably heard that term flash crash, and that's where in a matter of minutes or seconds, a stock can plunge down 30 or 80%. It's because there are all these stop-loss orders in there. Everybody's doing programmed computerized trading. And when everybody tries to sell at the same time, the bottom falls out and prices collapse. And that's probably what we saw on the Swiss franc this week. Everybody had their orders in to sell, and while they thought they were going to be protected and only lose 2 or 3%, they didn't. The price crashed 30%. And you have to remember, a lot of these traders, they're buying on credit. It's called margin. It's not even their own money they're trading. They're trading borrowed money. So consequently, what happens is the price falls so low, so fast, that these traders and speculators can't cover their margin or can't cover their loans that they've used to borrow this money because the bottom has just fallen out on the price. So when the dust settles and they found out that they've lost 30%, the fact of the matter is that was borrowed money. So they can't make good on the loan, so they default on their margin loan. That means the trading company likewise goes insolvent because the money that they loaned to the speculators wasn't money that they had either. They borrowed it from somebody else. And so that's why we've seen over the last 48 hours, several of these Forex currency exchange companies go bankrupt. Now, it wasn't on the level of the bankruptcy that we saw with Lehman Brothers in 2008. But again, these are the ripples of uncertainty that are going through the marketplace. And all this was spurred simply by the action of one central bank of a teeny little country in Europe. Now remember, this wasn't a country default or even a bank default in Switzerland. This was just simply a policy change. Imagine what would happen if Greece decides to default on their loans, or Italy or Spain or Portugal or Russia for that matter. That's what's driving the uncertainty in the marketplace. And that uncertainty is perpetuated because as these trading companies go out of business or these speculators try and make good on their bad loans or their bad trades, they have to sell other assets. For example, let's just say that you were speculating in Nestle stock and suddenly overnight your Nestle stock plunges 15%. Now that didn't necessarily happen, but I'm just using this as an example. If that would happen, You might have to sell your Walmart stock and take your profits out of Walmart to pay for your loss in Nestle. See, I just use this as an example to show you how this can affect the global stock market. So companies that have absolutely nothing to do with Switzerland or Europe or whatever, that's how they can be impacted. And that's called a contagion because it spreads like a disease. See, as I mentioned, this was just a policy decision. It wasn't a default. And we're still seeing these repercussions through the marketplace. Now, here's the biggest thing that you really need to consider with the consequences and the turbulence in the market that we're seeing by the Swiss central bank's decision. And let me step back a minute, because I never really did describe what this policy change was all about. So for those of you that are not aware, about 3 years ago, Switzerland, that had a fairly strong and stable and reliable currency, the Swiss franc, and that's because they're not part of the euro trading zone, they're a very independent country, and they maintained a very stable currency. Well, about 3 years ago, they started to panic because they saw so many countries devaluating their currency, which incidentally is what we're seeing once again. But they were concerned with this because their multinational companies and their exporters were coming to the government saying, we can't be competitive because our Swiss franc is too strong. It's appreciating too high against other currencies. So investors and speculators are bringing their money into Switzerland for safety. And that keeps raising the value of our Swiss franc, which then consequently makes our products more expensive overseas when we try and sell them or export them. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that that statement is accurate. I'm just saying that that was the argument of these exporters and multinationals. Because you see, I also believe the argument could be made that having a strong currency is really a zero-sum game to exporters. Let's take Nestle, for example. While it would be true that if Nestle made chocolate in Switzerland and then tried to sell it to the United States, the stronger the Swiss dollar became, potentially the higher Nestle chocolate would have to sell for to make the arbitrage difference. However, the fact that the Swiss franc would be so strong would also mean that the cocoa beans and the sugar and all the other products that they had to buy to put into that chocolate bar would be purchased at a significant discount to the price in US dollars, due to the fact that the French currency was so strong. So I don't know that the argument holds up. But in any case, that is the argument they make. And because of that, the central bank said that they would peg their currency to the euro, meaning that if the euro went up in value or down in value, the Swiss central bank would intervene and basically either print more or less francs or buy more and less euros or whatever they had to do to manipulate the price so that the relationship between the franc and the euro stayed current. Well, if you've been paying attention to currencies lately, you know that the US dollar in the last year is up probably something like 15%, well over 10%. And that isn't an intrinsic value. That's just in relationship to other currencies. So for the dollar to go up, that means other currencies like the yen or the euro had to go down. And so while the euro has been deteriorating, Switzerland has had to come in and debase their currency just to stay even with the euro. So that's been going on for the last 3 years. And just last week, the Swiss central bank said that they were going to continue that policy. Well, Thursday morning, they changed course and they announced that they were going to reset their currency and they were going to decouple it from the euro, meaning that they weren't going to print any more money or buy any more euros or European bonds or whatever to devaluate their currency. They were just going to let it float to its natural level. And that's why virtually within seconds, it appreciated 30%. So the concern and the question you have to ask yourself is, what panicked the Swiss central bank so badly that they had to reverse their 3-year policy and all of a sudden decouple their currency from the euro? You see, next week, I think it's on January 22nd, the European Central Bank is supposed to announce their quantitative easing program. And we've talked about this in previous episodes. In fact, I think it was the last episode that I mentioned that we're not sure exactly what Mario Draghi, he's the president of their central bank, he's their Janet Yellen. We're not sure what he can do. He might have to try and pull a rabbit out of his hat. He's been talking a good story for the last year or so about how they were going to have intervention, but their laws are different because the European Union is exactly that. It's not a federalized government like we have in the United States. So they have more limitations on what they can actually do because all these individual countries are still sovereign. So we're not sure exactly what Draghi can do to try and stimulate Europe and get it out of the malaise that it's in. So here we are a few days before the European Central Bank's announcement, and we have Switzerland making this radical 180 degrees policy change. So you have to scratch your head and say, what do they know that we don't? What do they think is coming? Exactly what is the European Central Bank going to do? It must be something pretty drastic, or else why would Switzerland react in this manner? And then I think maybe the bigger question than that is, just how bad is Europe? I mean, if the European Central Bank has to pull out all the stops to try and stabilize the economies over there, then maybe things are a lot worse than we've been told they are. And again, that gets back to the whole Southern Europe thing. Is Greece going to default? What's happening with Italy, Spain, Portugal? You have to remember, although we're going through a long, dragged-out recovery here in the United States since the crisis in 2008, Europe has never recovered, particularly in Southern Europe. They have deep-rooted systemic problems. They've been trying to prop up their welfare states since the end of World War II. That's 70 years of bad economic policy, and it doesn't go away overnight, and they're really not doing anything to make it go away. They've just been covering over and papering over things. So while here in the United States, our phony baloney unemployment rate is somewhere around, 5.8% or something? In Italy, their official unemployment rate is over 13%. And just like in the United States, it's drastically higher among young people. Spain's unemployment rate is somewhere over 20%, maybe as high as 24%. And they're happy about that. They're bragging about how it's coming down. Of course, we know things in Greece are abysmal. I've seen estimates that their unemployment rate is something like 25%, and that's not like a shadow stat. I mean, that's the real official rate. So again, the question you have to ask yourself is, what can the European Central Bank do to turn these countries around? And is it so drastic that Switzerland had to decouple their currency? Well, we don't know. We'll have to just wait and find out. But these are the uncertainties that are causing the volatility in the market, these wide swings that we see from day to day. All the indexes up one day, all the indexes down the next. And we're not talking little incremental moves. These are wide swings of, say, a percent or so. These are markets that are too uncertain to call. So what are the repercussions? How does it affect you? It doesn't mean that you should run down to your bank and take your money out and bury it in the backyard. It doesn't mean that the U.S. economy is going to collapse. Don't believe any of that gloom and doom. What it does mean is that the market is changing its personality. We've had a fairly stable market, certainly from 2013 through 2014. Up until recently, we seldom saw a decline in the stock market of more than, say, 5 or 6%. As soon as prices would come down the littlest bit, traders and investors would rush in and buy on the dips. Well, that all started to change back in October. That's when we saw right around a 10% correction on the S&P 500. And since then, although it's recovered, we've seen some wild fluctuations, not only week to week, but day to day. That's a change in the overall market's personality. That's something for you to be concerned about. Now, right now, as I record this, it's midday on Friday, January 16th. The indexes right now are up substantially, and that's a good sign. Incidentally, I'll add here, when I say midday, I'm talking about near 1:30 p.m. East Coast time. There are three key times to watch the stock market. That's at the market open at 9:30 a.m. That's at midday around 1 and 1:30. And the reason that time is so critical, that's about the time that the European markets close, particularly the British Stock Exchange. And so you'll see that foreign money moving into U.S. markets. So that afternoon time period is very critical. And then finally, the most important trade of the day is that last 10 minutes when the market closes. And that really end of the day final closing price, that's the one that matters because that's when people have locked in their profits. So the most significant price is always the closing price. But that opening price, that midday price, and then that end of day price, you do want to watch those three points. So right now, we're seeing the markets hold up. They were down early this morning, they bounced right back up, and now they've held through this afternoon when markets have closed in Europe. So that's a good sign, possibly a sign that we won't have a meltdown over the next few hours of trading. And that's also very important because remember, Monday is Martin Luther King Day. The markets will be closed. The markets in the United States, anyways, will be closed. So you can imagine that a lot of U.S. traders or people trading in the United States, they're going to be concerned about exposure over a long weekend when the Asian and the European markets will still be trading with what we just saw in Switzerland, with the announcements coming up next week of the European Central Bank, with the government elections coming on in Greece. See, that's a lot of instability. So you can imagine that a lot of people that are holding U.S. stocks, they might want to sell this afternoon to get out ahead of the long weekend. So the fact that stocks are holding up so well at 1:30 in the afternoon on Friday, that's a good sign to me. But the key statistic will be what happens at 4 o'clock today. In any case, even though I talk about the market being up significantly, we're still only talking about 0.5% or so. The market's been down 5 of the last trading sessions. It's been down significantly with very large volatility. So even if the markets recover today around 0.5% or so, that still puts the major indexes well below their 50-day moving average. The close in the S&P 500, if it remains where it's at right now, will be somewhere, probably halfway between its 50-day and 200-day moving average, right? Fluctuating somewhere around 2,000. That's a good number. That's a psychological number. It's a number where we've seen support in the past. So perhaps the markets will be able to hold on here. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But again, don't be surprised if you see that price collapse in the last 10 minutes of today's trade. As I mentioned, I will be back this weekend with an episode. We will wrap up the week. We'll look at specific performance and a market review. And then I'll also get to the topic in talking about inflation and deflation, which I know has troubled many of you. You've had a lot of questions about that. And so I'll try and bring some clarity to that subject. In the meantime, if you have questions or concerns and you'd like to leave me a comment, you can do so at our website, which is wealthsteading.com. Until our next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.